Hey, 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 everybody, and welcome to Rummy and Dan's High School Reunion Podcast, brought to you by PV Electronics. Today,
we love you, PV.
We do. We love you.
Beyond.
Beyond. We love you. Today, we had a conversation with Stephen Chilardi, which was amazing. It was unexpected. He's the bullpen catcher.
Professional baseball player.
Yeah, for the LA Dodgers.
Yeah.
And the conversation was fantastic, actually. So
really inspiring. Yeah, very inspirational.
Very inspirational. So we hope you get inspiration out of this as much as we did. Enjoy. Thanks very much.
Good morning.
Morning, everybody.
I am so well.
Dan evening, and I whenever you're listening to this, really.
Yes. Yeah. Dan and I are so thrilled to have Stephen Chilardi here.
Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah, that's
it.
Fantastic.
And Stephen Chilardi is Los Angeles Dodger.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself, man. Like how you got into
baseball.
Baseball, all that sort of fun stuff.
Okay. To start, I played college baseball at Kansas Wesleyan University and graduated college in 2009. I was drafted.
I'm going to stop you because you know it started way before this. It started when you were playing catch with your father.
You
played in high school, you played you played little league, you've done all that.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. All right, we'll go way back.
There's no wrong or correct answer, but you know, like you've been a fan of baseball your whole life or?
Pretty much. I would consider getting a little bit of a later start than most. Mm-hmm. I probably didn't learn to appreciate baseball until I was about 10, 11 years old.
Mm. And then played Little League?
Yeah, I played Little League at that time. Yeah. So there's Little Leagues in there a little bit. My father was actually an athletic trainer for the Chicago Cubs and Colorado Rockies for quite a bit. And so we lived in Colorado for, 6 years or so.
Is there a disappointment that you were with the Dodgers now?
No, absolutely not. No. Absolutely not. To be at the major league level in any fashion, it's a great
absolutely.
Honor. And I've enjoyed it tremendously. So we lived in Colorado for a number of years. And I think it was right around that time that I learned to not only enjoy baseball, but appreciate it a little bit more. I was around the game quite a bit at that age, as you could imagine, mm-hmm. Going around the clubhouse and being around the guys like Andres Galarraga, Ellis Burks, and those guys. And so I think just kind of being around it, I just naturally kind of got into it. But that didn't happen until a little bit later in my life. 10, 11 years old, and that's when I started kind of playing and that kind of stuff. So,
what position did you play in Little League?
I played a little bit of everywhere.
Is that what you do in Little League? You kind of test the waters, or like do the coaches put you in like anywhere and stuff like that just to see what's your best fit? Or forgive me, I'm from Australia, like I don't know too much, but I like sport, so that's why I'm curious. Yeah,
what is the main sport in Australia?
I'd say AFL, Australian Football League, but that's mainly just played in Victoria. And then you've got rugby league, you've got rugby union, we've got cricket, which everybody here in America that I've spoken to absolutely abhors.
No, I don't think we understand cricket.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think we abhor it. We just don't know it, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
I mean, I know it because I lived there, but...
Yeah. Well, cricket, do you know anything about cricket?
I don't know anything about the sport. I mean, I've seen it on TV.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Stuff,
like
so.
That's kind of like a like people equate that with baseball because it's a long game. You know, there's different kinds of skills and things like that involved in like a batter and a pitcher or batter and bowler, as we say, and
I
stuff like that.
I do not equate it with baseball at all.
Really?
It is so.
Well, yes, it's very different, but
it has the same kind of
like format in a way, except that we play games that can go for 5 days.
Yeah, exactly. Baseball, you have 9 innings, and that's, and sometimes not even 9, and sometimes you're just winning and you're like,
1,000 innings until.
There's not 1,000 innings. The most you have is 9.
Well, we can actually go into extra innings and we can technically play it for.
You can play it for forever.
Well, you can go extra innings if you're tied, right? And then you go an extra inning.
Yeah.
I played softball, so I have a little
fair
bit
enough.
Of understanding.
My mother played softball, actually. She was a gun pitcher in softball.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've got like the newspaper clippings and everything. She represented Queensland.
Listen, I was crap, just so you know. I was great at bat, horrible in the outfield. But so you played every position.
Yeah, sorry. I just completely interrupted.
No, it's perfectly fine. Yeah, I would say that I played, you know, just about every position at that age. I think a lot of kids did. I think the game, even at that level, has changed quite a bit. I think it's gotten much more competitive.
Has it always been televised?
Which?
Like Little League? Because I'm starting to see, like, I think it's on ESPN. Like,
my Little League was never televised.
Is it Little League or is a little bit higher that I start to see televised?
Probably a little bit higher. Yeah. However, they do have the Little League World Series.
Isn't that a lot of pressure on kids?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I know there's a number of people that are at the major league level now that happen to be part of Little League World Series.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I think there's always something to be said for just being around the game and playing regardless. Yeah. And I think at that age, maybe it's probably not as stressful because you're having fun and everything else. It's just a great experience to have.
It's not fun now?
No. That's a good point. No, good point. Fair.
But I mean, like, you hear that a lot with professional sports people is that they lose the fun because it becomes such a business and becomes such a result-orientated kind of thing, and you have so much pressure on you that, like,
I think that's
they lose
any
the fun.
Industry.
Yeah,
this is the reason why I never wanted to become a singer, because I love singing, and I never wanted to pursue it as a profession because then I would start to not enjoy it as much anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so, please continue. Sorry, I'm going to stop now.
I'm not going to say that what I do isn't fun whatsoever, but like you had said, that sometimes you spend so much time in an industry that at some point it does become a little bit more professionalized, or, you know, and, you know, being part of one of the largest organizations in the world, you're more focused on, you know, what it is you can do for the players and in my spot, like players, coaches, and kind of serving them on a daily basis. And I'm not saying that that's not fun, but sometimes it takes your attention away from maybe some of the more fun aspects of the game because I'm not necessarily playing anymore. So I'm at a little bit of a different role.
Can you explain what your role is?
Yeah, sure. My title is Major League Bullpen Catcher. And so my primary roles are to, you know, do some of the practice things with the players, warm up some of the pitchers before they go in the game, throw batting practice whenever I can to the position guys before the game. And then off the field, I try to assist the coaches in, you know, any facet that I can. Right now, I'm just kind of put together some of the advanced scouting reports just to kind of organize it for the coaching staff, just to kind of do some a little bit more of a, I guess you could say, administrative work.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I do on a daily basis. A lot of throwing. It's very physical. And I thoroughly enjoy being around some of these, you know, great professionals.
Wicked. So how did you evolve into that particular role?
Okay. Well, yeah, going back after the league and going back to my original going to college and graduating in 2009, I was drafted. After that, in the 2009 amateur draft, and I was able to play professional baseball for 5 years. It was a wonderful experience, and it just so happened to turn into this position that I have now. About 2 years into pro ball, I wasn't really playing a whole lot. I was more of kind of a supportive player at that point, and decided to kind of stick with it and try to help some of the guys that had a better chance to get to the major league level get, you know, their shot. Mm. So about after 5 years, I was kind of picking around a little bit. I was interested in doing more in the game. However, I had my education and that kind of thing. And so, you know, it's just kind of faced with a, you know, somewhat difficult decision if I wanted to keep doing what I was doing. But I needed to make sure that the organization saw maybe some value in me in doing something else with the organization. So I kind of picked around, and I think it was just being in the right place at the right time, this position opened up. I had been doing some of the coaching type role or like transitioning at the AAA level year prior. And so when this position officially opened up, my name was the right place, right time. So I got it.
You say something really interesting, because you said that, you know, you were just kicking around a little bit. This is the minors we're talking about, mm-hmm. I'm guessing. And you decided you were going to help the people who had more of a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you see in those particular people? Because, you know, it's really interesting to me that sports is entertainment, but not entertainment. I mean, what I mean is that it's not subjective. You have any other field, you know, acting, mm-hmm. singing, dancing, and somebody could just have that star quality. They could not be as good a good actor as somebody else, but they have that special something that will catapult them, and it's seen. Other people see it, and then they can have a career out of that. But sports is so much more like science. I think of it as more of math and science. You either have it or you don't. Am I wrong or right about that? You either have a physical quality.
Yeah.
No,
you can have a great personality, but I mean, you could suck.
Personality comes into it, but that's more, like, is the personality part's more the celebrity aspect of it? Like if you've got the skills, you need to have the skills. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the skills, then, you know, there's no point. But if you've got like a particular personality, then that can enhance you in regards to, would you say, like sponsorships and things like that? Like, and you know what I mean?
I think it just kind of depends on where you're at in your career. I mean, yeah. Let's say, you know, a 10-year major league established player would be more probably inclined to have some of those benefits just because of the longevity he's created in his, you know, career and life and achievements and everything else. So I think it's more so just having time at that level and then having those opportunities kind of come in later. So it takes a lot to get to that point.
Yeah.
Going back to your point, like when you get drafted, the minor league system is so vast. A lot of people don't understand that. There's, you know, just kind of shoot from the hip here, there's relatively or roughly six minor league teams, you know, per organization.
Oh, okay.
You know, just ours, for example, we have two Arizona rookie leagues. We have a third rookie league in Ogden, Utah, and we have low A, high A, double A, triple A, and then the major league level. Mm-hmm. So you have to have rosters and staff fill each one of those, the rosters for each one of those affiliates. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of players. It's a lot of staff. It's a lot of competition. And everybody, for the most part, I mean, some people enjoy being down on the development side, but they want to get to the major league level. So it's highly competitive. And going back to your point about just either you have it or you don't, well, to get drafted, you have to have a certain amount of skill. That's just the fact.
Also as well, because like,
but what did you see?
You have to, the skill has to develop even more, doesn't it? After once you get drafted, because there's so much that they can teach you more. Is that correct?
It's like having the born gift of being able to sing really well or hit like certain tones, but right. you haven't mastered that. So what you do is you get coaching or anything else. I mean, you have the ones that are just able to they just can do it.
Yeah.
But even then there's fine tuning. Because you're around the best in the world, really. I mean, when you get drafted by any major league organization, you're going to be around the best around the world. Mm. And that means from, you know, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, you know, because they're bringing in players and signing even free agents, you know, from outside the country, all over the world. So it's, if you can imagine, it's extremely, extremely competitive. And I guess going back to your point, it's like, what did I see? Well, I don't know if I necessarily saw anything. It was more of the fact of just kind of realizing what my position was. And instead of more so being negative or caught up in the thoughts of where am I going and what is it that I need to kind of do to get to the major league level, I more so embraced the fact that maybe I should try to help these other guys get there. You know, for example, you know, as a supporting player, it's more important for me to have, you know, player A get his reps in, player B throw his bullpen. And that was just kind of how I started to view things. So I kind of took myself out of the equation altogether so I can provide that for them the best that I could and just kind of keep myself out of it, really. So I just wanted to support all those guys as much as I possibly could, because I know that it's an extreme rarity to have the opportunity, and then it's even more rare to, you know, get to the major league level, and then even more rare to get there and stay. So if I could have helped somebody attain that opportunity, I really wanted to be able to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to be my manager?
Do you want to, like, are there, like, expanded aspirations? Like, it sounded like when you were telling me the little things that you were doing, like, are you wanting to, you know, move into, like, coaching and things like that? Like, is there any...
It does sound like that. That's yeah. kind of where you want to go.
Oh, well, thanks. I'm not sure if I've quite nailed it down yet. I know that sometimes when you set expectations for yourself, it's great to have a goal and everything else, but sometimes expectations can get in the way of being able to truly excel at That's, what it is that maybe you're just maybe good at or what absolutely. You kind of want to do. And so it's quite a difficult thing to kind of battle that mentally, because you have goals, you have aspirations, you want to get to this point. Well, really, for me, it's just about focusing on the process each and every day. And for Excellent. Me, it's about being able to understand what it means to focus on the process. So, like sitting here with you today, it's how would I be able to articulate that vision to you? Mm. And if I can't articulate that vision to you, then where is my path, right? So, it's kind of just where I come from with that. To say that I don't have any goals or aspirations, that'd be completely false. But I think my goals and aspirations more lie within my self-development on a daily basis and treating every human being and trying to gain as much perspective as I possibly can and appreciating those perspectives. And I just don't think that sometimes that's done very much. So it's about taking your own, you know, perspective goggles off in order to try to truly relate to the world that like other people do. So
that's awesome. I was that's just really thinking, good. I was like, oh man, like, wow, I need to take that on
so
board sometimes.
Evolved.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you're talking about, because I hear so few people speak like this. You should actually
Well, have a listen. No, I mean, like you have a listen to the best of the best in almost any industry, and I find that they do have that or similar kinds of philosophy. Like, you listen to, you know, Kobe Bryant talking or LeBron James, and like, you know, anyone of that level, and they do have this kind of interpersonal, like, you know, bettering themselves as a human kind of a thing and stuff like that. And it seems like it's a very strong, important kind of quality to have. And the fact that you've noticed that, I think, is really, really commendable and awesome. And it's, you know, it's inspiring as well, because it makes you kind of go, huh, am I doing that? Do I need to change a few little, you know, things here and there and stuff like that? And I think that's really, really cool. Especially in sport.
Dan, it's about getting out of your own way.
Yeah, no,
more
exactly.
than anything. Yeah. And you've gotten out of your own way.
Hmm? Well, yeah. Well, oh, sure. Thanks.
Trying.
Yeah, well, I'm trying. Yeah. Yeah. It's obviously not foolproof. I mean, I think we all have to sit down sometimes and realize that, hey, you know, I probably didn't approach the situation probably the best that I could. And being able to actually think through things and not just kind of going off your emotions. I think that sometimes that's where you can also kind of, you know, get knocked off your path a little bit, is by reacting based off of those emotions. But really, those emotions are just coming from a perception, you know. So it's like, where's my perception coming from? And so for me, it's like combining the wisdom, intelligence, and everything else in order to have the clearest perception that I can and most helpful perception that I can. And I try to take that to, you know, whoever I'm around on a daily basis. So it doesn't really matter if I'm around, you know, professional athletes, you know, ex-Hall of Famers, you know, legends or whatever. I want to be able to treat everybody basically the same. Mm-hmm. And I truly just respect what it is that they went through or are going through in order to attain what it is that they want in life, you know. And it's about understanding, you know, what it is that separates those people from the ones that maybe aren't successful or didn't get their dreams and goals, you know. And so I strive to understand that the best that I can, and hopefully someday can maybe offer ways to better that
daily. I can see you writing a book, dude. I can see you writing a book.
We're going on tour with this. Yeah. But you learned this fairly early because you were still in the minors when you got out of your own way and said, I want to, which is very magnanimous, by the way. You, especially in Los Angeles. Thank you. As English major. Especially in Los Angeles, you don't hear a lot of people say, well, I'm just going to take myself out. And I realize that, you know, my friend here has more of an ability to be a movie star or, you know, acclaimed actor than I do. So you know what? Screw my career. I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to put all my effort over there. No, I mean, you don't hear people say that at all, really.
No, you don't.
Well, no. And thank you. You know, it was one of those, I don't know, it's, again, I don't mean to beat the dead horse with this word, but having to be able to articulate those things. So when I was in the minor leagues doing it, I didn't know necessarily why. I knew that, you know, we had first, second, third round draft picks that were seen as having more of an ability or more likelihood to get to the major league level. And I think it's unfortunate that sometimes people go missed or they're not seen or anything else because there's a ton of focus on those key players. Now, that's just kind of part of it. I get it. Not a big deal. But having the ability to articulate what it is that you're thinking, why it is that you're doing, what you're doing, I think is extremely, extremely important. And so the last 2 years or so, I've strived as an extremely hard, extremely driven way to have that ability to be able to articulate what my thoughts and goals are like, what it is that I'm trying to accomplish. For me, I've listened to a couple of other people and it's true. I mean, when it comes down to being a leader, having leadership qualities, if you can't paint the picture for the people next to you, then what good?
Mm. Right. Do you like read a lot of inspiring books and things like that?
I've always been, and my wife, she gives me a little bit of a hard time because I can never like sit down and read like a, you know, just a regular book, like a story.
Yeah.
I've always been like, I want the information. I want more informative. I want the quick 1-2 sentences that I can get the most out of.
Mm.
But I've learned to kind of expand my horizons a little bit. But long story short, yeah, I do enjoy reading about that kind of stuff. I do enjoy reading about the success of others. I enjoy reading, maybe, you know, the certain aspects of that person's life, maybe a lot of people don't know that ended up helping with their success. I enjoy that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's another reason why we're doing this. Like, we get to chat to, like, you know, awesome people like yourself, and it only just informs us about, you know, like, it informs us about, you know, different people's lives, how they got to where they got to. And, you know, we can take away little, you know, little gems and things like that and kind of like implement it in our own lives. And also the audience gets to listen to all these different people and how, you know, and maybe they can relate in certain aspects and stuff like that. And I think it's really cool. Like, I like it. It's great. Like, my whole family have been quite sporty, mm-hmm. and especially my first youngest brother, he was like studying to be a physiotherapist, and now he's a school teacher and stuff like that. But he loves reading all those books, absolutely loves reading all those books. And I have found that when it comes to life, reading books about, you know, like successful sport people have been the most like informative. I don't know what it is. It's just like, like the top sports people are very philosophical and things like that. And they seek out those ways to better themselves and things like that.
Not all of them.
Well, I mean, not all of them.
No, I've met some big ones.
Yeah.
At working at the Plaza, and they were assholes. They were not trying to better themselves at all.
No.
No, they were just ordering prostitutes and being dicks. Sorry.
No, but they're the ones you read.
Who probably don't write the books.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Like you like some of the big ones.
Right?
The best
you know,
one.
I mean, you've met some professional athletes. They're,
come on, spill
they're
the gossip. Spill the beans. Spill
they're
the beans. Spill the beans.
Amazing.
No. Right? And, you know, honestly, if I knew something about that, I I wouldn't spill the beans.
nice segue. Yeah.
I had to sign a confidentiality agreement working at the Plaza saying that I would never reveal like what I saw when I saw everything because there were so many celebrities, but a lot of sports people, a lot of professional athletes coming into town. I saw it all.
Yeah. Do you mean like the Olympics, like after?
No, not like the Olympics.
After the event?
I'm talking about, you know, like Major
Big time,
League
yeah.
baseball players, major, you know, National Hockey League, NBA. I mean, superstars.
Yeah.
Superstars.
But you do understand that there's some, like, you know, some really big ones that have written some phenomenal books and stuff like that.
There are big ones. Yeah. I'm just saying that.
Not all of them.
Not all of them.
Yeah.
Right, Stephen?
Well, sure. I mean, yeah. like, I think you're going to find...
It's the same with anything, really. Yeah. Actors, singers.
Anything. You're going to have, the Rotten Tomatoes in really any industry that you work in. So, you know, to say that is a... specific quality of professional athletes, I would disagree. I just think that's something that you find probably in every industry. And to speculate, you know, how much would probably just be wrong.
Yeah, but there is, I guess, so over all the industries, excuse me, there is this essence of like self-educating and things like that, which I think, you know, a lot of people try and pursue, which is, you know, what we're doing right now. Like we're trying to find like little gems and things like that. Mm-hmm. But if you go and have a look at a lot of the books about famous, you know, actors and sports people and stuff like that, obviously a lot of them probably have had like troubled lives, especially in the acting department and the singing department.
That's why they
become actors and stuff like that.
Be for their pain, Stephen.
they need to get it out. But you do read some like really amazing stuff of like how they, you know, Michael Jordan wanting to be the best of the best and what he did and like mm-hmm. the extra reps and stuff like that he did and stuff like that. Well, who was the coach of the, I keep referencing basketball, I'm sorry. The Lakers, who was the big coach of the Lakers for a while, and he got them introduced meditation and yoga and all that sort of stuff around the time when it wasn't really thought of as anything kind of like, this is not what basketball players do. But he introduced that and they were like, went back to back or something like that. But
interesting.
Is there stuff like that that is introduced into the major league? Like all that kind of like regarded as, you know, different?
Well, I think
I'm just babbling right now. I'm sorry.
No, you're perfectly fine. You know, I don't have really a lot of experience in other sports. So I can't really say from, you know, very accurately I think that'd be kind of naive of me to try to dive into something that I don't really know a lot about. And baseball, I think is a little bit different in which that's, it's a little bit more individualized. You know, you have 9 players on the field that all have to do their job specifically as individuals in order to accomplish what the team goal is. So, it is a very team, you know, type sport, obviously, but you do need to have individual success. You do need to have the guys do well. I think long story short, again, I think that it's more probably personal to them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they all have their routines and practice habits and everything else. And I don't know what, you know, professional athletes do outside of the the stadium or arena, whatever else. So to say that it's part of what they do, I can't tell you.
Well, what are some of your habits?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say exactly that. That was exactly my question. Tell us a typical day in the life of a Major League Baseball player, Stephen.
Okay. Well, I mean, for me specifically, I enjoy getting to the stadium kind of early.
What time is early?
I will get there between 9:30 and 10. Between 9:30 and 10:30, right in there. I enjoy going there. I enjoy socializing with our clubhouse staff. I enjoy having that individual time with some of them before it gets, you know, really busy. It's a great way for me to get a workout every morning. So I'm able to go. I'm able to kind of do my workout each and every morning because, like I said, my job's very physical and I just like to make sure that my...
What's your workout?
Well, that might be for just an entire different podcast.
1,000 squats.
Yeah, 1,000 squats. No, so I enjoy going to the stadium early for those reasons. And then a typical day would, you know, players would probably show up anywhere between, you know, 12 and 1 o'clock. I mean, 12 is probably still pretty early. But and then after that point, I try to be available for them as much as I can. Typically, their work's not going to start probably until between 2 and 3 o'clock. So between 12 and 2 is kind of like some downtime. And so what I like to do is I like to read. I like to catch up on things. I like to make sure things are going okay at my house, you know, while I'm gone. And that's just kind of like a little hour that I kind of give to myself each and every day to sit and reflect and learn. Something that I enjoy about my workouts. It is kind of a meditative type, you know, time for me. It's not just working out to try to get, you know, swole or whatever. but I do like to sit and I'll listen to things and I'll read things. And I truly just like to sit there and think about stuff. So yeah, that's kind of, and then, you know, the practice will start. We'll have our batting practice. We'll have guys that need to throw bullpens. We'll have guys that need to throw to, you know, warm up, you know, from a reliever standpoint. And so we'll either catch them, throw with them, throw batting practice to the position guys during batting practice. And then we have our little pregame, like lunch, whatnot. And then mm-hmm. game starts and then I'll catch the guys getting ready to come into the game and then do it all over again the next day.
You know, it's really interesting. Steven, you once asked me as an actress, what my day is like. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, it varies day to day, but I do want to let you know, cause you probably don't know this, that you hear a lot of people say to actors, if you want to be successful, you have to live your life like a professional athlete. And it's that dedication mm-hmm. and what's the word I'm looking for?
Dedication.
Discipline.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. And, yeah. and discipline. Because I'm sure you don't go home and eat cheeseburgers every day. I mean, yeah. look at you. You're really fit.
Oh, thanks. There's a little bit more in my background and just baseball. So I was able to graduate with my degree. I was able to get my degree in a Bachelor of Arts in athletic training, emphasis in athletic training. And then during my minor league career, I was able to attain my athletic trainer certification. And that particular profession, you're no good without a certification. So that was important for me to get that. I was able to get that, and then that allowed me to work during the off seasons to make a decent income and to also, again, better that side of me and make sure that I was, you know, getting some sort of experience from athletic training, just in case baseball didn't work out, at least had something to kind of fall back on from an experience standpoint. And then also I was able to attain my strength conditioning specialist certification. That was just kind of fun because I realized I was kind of more interested in, you know, the physical aspect of the, you know, being healthy and that kind of stuff. So, and then I was able to get a precision nutrition certification. That's just kind of was a thing, again, kind of for fun. It was completely online, but I was able to do it relatively easily throughout the season. So I was able to get that. So if you can kind of picture where I've kind of come to now, like, yeah, I like to eat healthy. I like to take care of myself. I'm extremely interested, but it's also what allows me to do my job. And I feel like it would allow me to do my job the best that I can from a physical standpoint, which again, leads back to providing the service for the player. Mm. So that is, again, comes right back to what my main goal is.
Because the top people, they would see that and they'd see all the hard work that you've put in and kind of go, okay, this person's serious. Then also this person can provide this and provide this and provide this and provide this because they've done that kind of expansive kind of work.
And here's the trick for that. I don't care if they notice. And so that's where I think that I think that maybe it could be, you know, the difference between somebody who has success, somebody who doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe somebody who puts it out there because they want other people to see, maybe they do become successful. However, that's not something that I want to do because I want to make sure that what I'm doing is not only fulfilling me, but it's completely genuine, meaning that if I were to be noticed, it wouldn't matter because I would just do it every single day. I don't need my bosses. I don't need the players. I don't need anybody to notice what it is that I'm doing. Because it comes back to providing the best quality service for everybody around me, period.
You're so inspiring.
Yeah, I love that,
I mean,
dude.
Honestly, I'm listening
so
to
good.
You, and I was like, what am I?
I'm like, oh,
like?
Man, like, do I need to improve as a human being? What's going on right now? Oh, dear God.
No, I just, I love that. And again, I think that in my past, I think I've been given a little bit of a hard time at times because I am a nice guy, you know, and I care about other people. And I think that in some ways that has, and yeah, has shunned me a little bit. It has kept me away from being who it is that I truly want to be because you get kind of caught up like, am I doing this the right way? Like,
oh,
why?
Dude,
yeah,
I can
why,
relate
you know,
to
like,
this so much.
You know, so you allow people to kind of dogma, right? You kind of live based off of what other people think at times. And so there's a bit of a struggle there at times because it's like you want to exude that kind of, you know, attitude, behavior, and everything else. But then if somebody makes fun of you or whatnot, it just kind of throws you off a game sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so a challenge for me in the past has been
learning that resilience.
Yeah. Learning that resilience. In some respects, understanding that it is endearing, depending who it is coming from, because that is about relating to other people and, you know, the community aspect of, you know, a team. So again, being able to kind of set that aside. And again, this is like, as I'm a little bit younger and trying to understand things, will again, eliminate those emotions. Therefore, you can see things much more clearly. And so we're all trying to kind of get where we need to go or whatnot. And you have to see where it is that you're going if you're going to get there. So that's my goal, is just kind of get rid of all the extra crap so I can truly see.
That's awesome.
That sounded really corny.
No, not at all.
I was going to say, do you have any tips? Because I'd like to get rid of all the extra crap.
Yeah,
because
I'm like,
struggle.
What you just said before, I was like, oh my God, that's so me. excuse me. It's too early in the morning. I've been a people pleaser my whole life. And when it comes to like acting, like you get like, oh, you know, how's this going to come across? And oh, I'm doing this for the other person, like as in like, oh, they might not like this. If I do this, I could do this. And it just stifles my creativity. Mm-hmm. And like, I am working on doing what you are constantly working on, which is, you know, just getting rid of the, you know, the extra noise and just having like a laser-like focus. I'm like, no, I'm just going to do this for me and for like, you know, the people that I want to do that, like genuinely want to do this for. And I think it's really, really, you know, it's really good to hear that from you. And also I think a lot of people who are listening to this will really appreciate kind of stuff.
No, I appreciate that. And I think to go into your point is, again, and back to the goals and aspirations part of it, you know, it's there. Everybody has it. And so they're just trying to kind of find what it is that they kind of want to do and how to go about doing it. The one thing that we do every single day is that we interact with people. And so having, who knows? I mean, 5, 6, 7, 8 of what you call these micro events, you know, where you come in, you interact with somebody for 5 minutes and then you move on. That 5 minutes could legitimately dictate the way that person ends up viewing the day and, you know, kind of going about their business. So it's like a ripple effect. You know, and that's why each of one of those individualized interactions is so important and should never be taken for granted, really. I mean, because when somebody is passed on a daily basis, they know when they're getting passed. You know, it's like when somebody's trying to have a conversation or you're trying to have a conversation with somebody and their eyes are everywhere and you just know that they're not really having a conversation with you. Mm. And so their mind could be a number of the places. They could have personal issues or whatever. However, that is not the way that you have a proper conversation with somebody, right? So me personally, I'd rather just have you say, I'm a little distracted. I'm going to go, you know, do whatever it is I need to do and we'll try to talk later, you know, but the people that get passed by every single day know when they're getting passed by. And so when you take the time to stop and actually acknowledge them and recognize them, that's, I think, huge.
Is that main, like the club stuff?
I think that's everybody. I think that's, you know, everybody. I think that's, everybody that you pass, it doesn't matter. For me, it doesn't matter. Because if I'm labeling security guard or everything else, that's kind of leveling people. And I don't, no.
I get you. Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Like, I see you, okay? Like, and I want to have a conversation with you. I want to get to know you. I want to, you know, like, I don't need to know your life problems or anything else, but I think you just be surprised on sometimes with the way that people bottle things up and whatnot. They get soaked into this negative perception, like this whole just deep doubt and everything else. And then you have somebody come along and it's like, oh my God, I just feel better, you know, just because you're just able to kind of speak about something, you know, because it gets you distracted or it gets you off of whatever it is that you're thinking. So again, coming back to the ripple effect, and I think just having overall like organizational success and everything else, that's why it does. It starts from the very bottom. It does. And so wherever that may lie, I don't know where that is. And frankly, I don't really care because it's about treating everybody equally.
Equally.
And trying to see them for who they are and what their aspirations are and trying to help them view that and see that. You know, for example, we have one of our clubhouse guys he just finished school and everything else. And I always enjoy talking to him about his school. Like, how is it going? Like, what are your plans? This, because they're not able to sit there and talk about it, you know, daily, you know. And sometimes that's what people kind of need in order to be able to view their goals and where it is that they're kind of heading. However, now this is where it comes back to me and the way that I approach every single day, and that what I do fulfills me. You know, what I do, I understand what it is, you know, that I'm doing and why it is that I approach things the way that I do. And that allows for me to maximize those micro events that I have, you know, with other people in order to have a positive impact on their lives. And so I think that comes back down to the minor leagues and everything else, why it is that I kind of do what I do and why it is that I strive to understand what I understand. So.
Awesome. I love it.
Oh my God. Okay. So I'm going to paint a scenario for you because I'm interested, because I think you touched on this before where you said, you know, baseball, even though it's a team sport, it's also a very individual sport. And you see it in movies, especially where it's like, you know, the winning, you know, all the pressure is on one person and he's up at bat. And so bottom of the ninth, say bases are loaded. Okay. Bases are loaded and your team is down by one. So you need a double to win. And now you're up at bat and you know it's all on you. It's win or lose time. That's a lot of pressure to put on one person, especially when you said everybody has their individual job to do.
Sure.
And so what is it? What have you ever been put in that position, and what would you do at that point? Would you go for the home run and then, you know, it's a pop-up, somebody catches it and then you're out and then you lose? Or do you just play it safe and do you, you know, go for the double?
Well, I mean, I think that just kind of comes down to just, again, coming to what I said earlier, having the ability to focus on the process. You can't focus on the process truly if you don't understand what that means, for me personally. Oops, sorry. And I think that we're, you know, throughout the minor leagues and having a couple opportunities here and there, the closest thing that I can in order to relate to something like that, I was able to hit a game-winning home run in my rookie year. And I was extremely proud of myself because I wasn't playing. I wasn't getting, you know, probably what you would call an equal opportunity. I came in. It was the top of the ninth inning. I threw a runner out going to second to end the inning, came up for my only at bat that night and ended up hitting the game-winning home run. That was a huge moment in, you know, my life, and I'm extremely proud of that. But again, looking back at that in hindsight, it's like what enabled me to kind of do that? And I think it was setting aside all the other, what you call like the BS, you know, focusing on what it is that you need to do every single day. Just because I was helping out everybody else get to the major leagues doesn't mean that I wasn't working on my craft myself, you know? So I got a limited opportunity and I was just focused on the at bat. I wasn't trying to do too much. And really, I mean, if I was going to hit a home run, there's only like two spots that a pitcher would probably be able to throw it that I would be able to hit a home run. And he threw it there and ended up winning the game. And I think open some people's eyes a little bit. It kind of helped me get established a little bit in the minor leagues, and they kind of got to know me a little bit more after that. And again, I think carrying on and growing off of that mindset later in my career, it provided some other opportunity. Mm. Again, it was about coming out and doing your best with the one at bat that you get, the one inning that you get, or the two innings that you get to play, or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
I love it. You were able to clear your mind up at bat because honestly, I know, because I've been in that position in not so much when I was playing softball, but in soccer, or as you would say, football.
Yes, we and the rest of the world.
Right, but go on. I was a goalkeeper, and I just remember, our defense sucked, and I made so many catches that day. And yet when we lost, I swear I was the enemy. Everybody hated me. It wasn't my fault, but it was me. I missed, that last shot.
Yeah, no one realizes that it was a whole.
That's why 79
minutes before.
But all that pressure,
actual thing happened.
All that pressure was, oh my God, are people gonna like me? Am I gonna be a star? People gonna hoist me on their shoulders saying I won the game, or are they gonna crucify me? And all that pressure, and of course, all that going through my head, I could have caught that shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
In hindsight, hindsight's 20/20, but too much shit was going in my mind.
I think that's something that you learn from, right? Yeah. And I think that kind of comes down to, a pretty heavy word in my life and something that I don't take for granted, but the adversity. So there's always opportunity in adversity, and sometimes, people have a tendency to focus on the adversity part of it. Well, what is it that adversity is trying to kind of show you, tell you? What can you learn from it? And again, I think that is probably where most opportunity lies. Just people are focused on more of the superficial, what do people think about me? What is, how am I going to get that trophy? How am I going to get that, big contract? How am I going to get that, success, but not understanding, you see the peak, but just trying to, you don't take a helicopter there. You have to kind of climb this mountain to the peak, and it's not an easy
tumble,
path.
Tumble
it's really
down.
Not. Yeah, 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 it's not an easy path whatsoever.
The process,
yeah, it's the again, being able to focus on the process. Everybody has their unique talents and everything that they're able to kind of offer every single day, and it's again, I think it's unfortunate. And I'm getting kind of personal here, but I think it's unfortunate that sometimes people, they have these gifts and skills, but they're just not ever able to kind of embrace
them.
Yeah, share them.
Yeah.
Either because they're not comfortable or, they're fearful and they have all these other things blocking that. I think that sometimes with successful athletes, I think they're able to block that stuff out. I think that they have an innate ability to block all of that stuff out for success in the long run. Everybody, a lot of talent can come up and have immediate success, but to have success a long time, there has to be something special going on. I know a couple of players that are extremely, extremely disciplined in what they do. We're talking to the minute, for example, one of the people that I work with, it is an hour, 2 hours away from working with that individual, but he tells me, hey, planning on, such time, right? That's an hour, 2 hours in advance, right? So he has this process that he goes through in order to get to that almost minute. And I think that it's qualities like that. It's not just that alone, but it's qualities like that that can assist somebody in having success for the long term.
Yeah, I think that's what I was referring to in regards to why, people read a lot of books about sports people and stuff like that. It's not necessarily about the human being, but it's about that mindset and that kind of discipline and that dedication, which is very entrenched in sport, I kind of feel, to be the best of the best. And so that's what I kind of think why, I know my brother liked reading, and I liked reading a lot of, books about top sport people and stuff like that, because there is that kind of philosophy of being better in regards to their particular field. and you can take little gems out of that and stuff like that. But
you don't think actors can be like that?
No, but that's what I mean.
I was very regimented.
No, that's what I mean. But like, you know, actors and human beings, like, you know, we try and get inspiration from somewhere. Like, you know, we're chatting to a sports person right now and he's been giving like some really cool kind of things. And then as actors, we can take that on board.
No, I'm saying that I was like that. I was very disciplined like that. Because even when I wasn't in drama school, and actually even when I was in drama school and I had holiday time, I just remember it was just, and I would do an hour of voice on my own, you know, an hour of movement, hour of dance, you know, and then reading Shakespeare or reading a play and then always working on something. Mm. And this is why my mother was very against my being an actress initially. Innately, I can be a very lazy person when I don't want to do it. When I do want to do something, I will give it my 110%. Mm-hmm. And
I'm similar to that. Like if my heart's not in it, I'm like, yeah.
So she started supporting me because she realized how much I really want. She saw how dedicated I was. And but I would say that I'm a pretty disciplined person. This is why I'm good with having a dog.
Well, it's interesting that you say all that. So what I heard, just to kind of give you an idea of what my perception is, I heard everything that you had done to get to the point that you are at now. What says that all that stuff isn't making you successful now? So it's like you read Shakespeare, you had drama class. Those all shaped and formed you to be who you are.
Yeah, totally.
Today.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
You know about Shakespeare. I have no idea about Shakespeare. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how much you know about Shakespeare, but again, it's your experiences that kind of led to where you're at today. Sometimes maybe it's just your idea of success is wrong. Like you're already successful in a lot of ways, you know? And so again, it's about trying to kind of.
My mom says that too.
But it's trying to tilt that mindset.
It's the
perception part of it.
Is that where like say being grateful comes into play?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, because people could, like there are times where I'm really down and out and I'm like, and then I'm like, no. And then I just start listing things I'm grateful for. Then I'm like, oh shit. Actually, I am in a really good place, like compared to other people and things like that.
We all have to remember that there's somebody in this world that prays for your worst day. There's always somebody.
Yeah.
I've never heard that and I love it.
That's something that I heard a while ago that completely resonated with me because it's absolutely true. So, and again, talking about this, you know, philosophy stuff, it doesn't mean that you just say, oh, you know, everything's great, granny, blah, blah, blah. No, there has to be a point in time where you put your foot down or whatnot. However, I believe that if you go about it the right way, you'll just know when that is. So if you're focused on the process, you're focused on learning, you're focused on all these things, those opportunities will present itself where you now have an opportunity to be like, this is why I want to do this. Or somebody, you hear something in the background about, you know, an opportunity to do something and you're like, that really interests me, you know? So it's about having that clear mindset that maybe if you were clouded, you don't hear or you don't pick up anything else when it's...
And it's also, I think about, like you said, when an opportunity is presented, because I know opportunities are presented to me and I feel fear but now. And so in the past, I used to stop myself and say, I'm not going to do anything. I'll just let that go. I'm probably not going to get it anyway. And now, despite the fear, to say, you know, I'm going to do it anyway, recognize what is stopping me and why I'm scared. And then actually talking myself through it, you know, meditating through it. So, you know, and then doing it anyway. And is to do things that no one else would do. And that, when the first time I did that, it was very liberating because I was like, I did it.
Well, yeah. It is. It's about overcoming your fear. And that's easier said than done. So, I mean, we all have our, you know, fears of doing something. You know, heading over to do my very first podcast, I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
But the thing is that if you don't really focus on what it is that makes you fearful about it or questioning or whatever else, it allows you to be yourself to the absolute maximum. And I think that's probably more important when it is, you know, if opportunity does present itself somewhere. Because if you're not yourself, then you're never going to be yourself. And so it's just a matter of being able to kind of navigate that in the clearest way possible. Yeah.
Well, that was like us like doing this podcast. Like, we didn't really know where it was going to go, like when we first started this. Yeah. And we were like, you know, should we do it this way? Should we do it this way? And then we kind of went, let's just talk and let's just see what happens. And each podcast that we've done has been completely different, which is really cool. And I really like that. And, you know, this one's been amazing, like very different.
Very inspirational.
Very inspirational.
Because you're making me look at myself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but that's also like, that's what you do.
I guess.
Even though it might not be your intention, but that's what you did to us.
Well, that makes me happy then.
This
has been extremely enjoyable. Yeah, this it really is cool to kind of see how the conversation just kind of
evolves and flows and things like that. And
you know, a little bit about baseball, a little bit about sports, a little bit about
philosophy and mindset and all that sort of stuff.
Which in the long run,
it all comes together.
It all comes together. It all comes together. And we were here to kind of talk about baseball, what it's like to be part of the Dodgers organization, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's a little bit about, at least for me, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
The Dodgers as an organization, I feel like we're at a peak with a lot of things. We're having a lot of success right now, and we're, having a lot of fun. So
had a game on Sunday, by the way.
We have a game just about every day.
Oh. that's what I was going to ask. Like, how do you? Because how many games is it?
162.
Jeez.
Plus playoffs,
how do you keep this going for 160 something games? Like, how does that, like, that must be hard.
Well,
and exhausting.
Yeah. Well, to say that somebody to say that somebody doesn't have like a bad day or whatever else would just be naive. I have my days where I'm just kind of like, and the other day I was talking to my wife, she was trying to, she was making me feel a little bit better about things. You have those. You have those moments where you're just like, what is going on? You just kind of get lost a little bit. And so it's a challenge. However, again, it's an opportunity to learn about something. So I think that, some of the things that I do or whatnot, I think that helps me personally to get through 162 games like it's nothing. And, take each day, for what it is.
Rather than looking at it from a whole.
Absolutely. Yes.
You have a game tonight then?
What's that?
You have a game tonight?
We do.
Who are you playing?
We're playing the Giants.
Okay. No, I've always been a fan, actually, of the Dodgers organization. First of all, what was it? Was it 1918? Was that
for what?
For Brooklyn.
I'm not allowed to talk about that.
They came into, they left Brooklyn into Los Angeles. I think it was in 1950s or 1960s.
I think it was. Shooting from hip again. It's about 56, I think, 1956. Okay. Now, again, it may sound bad being that I'm part of an organization and not know the exact date, but it is in that area to which
But what I've always admired about the Dodger organization was that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Dodgers were the first to break the color barrier.
Yes.
Jackie Robinson.
Yes.
And so that alone.
Is that 56? What was that movie that came out?
Oh, 42.
42, sorry. 42. Yeah.
I didn't see that movie.
That's his number.
No, that's his number. Yeah. That's a great movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Was it?
Harrison Ford.
Yeah. Oh, now I have to see it.
No, it's a great movie. You should see it, definitely.
But no, so I think you should be extremely proud. If I was going to be in any baseball organization, I would definitely choose the Dodgers or the Yankees, of course. Because I'm from the East Coast, so I have But no, but Dodger, I'm a huge Dodger fan. So.
Well, I mean, there's multiple extremely historic organizations out there. And again, when it comes to the Dodgers, not going to speak on anything specifically, but I'm just extremely grateful for the opportunity that I've been given to work for an organization like the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's provided, I guess you could say, a number of opportunity for me and my family and everything else. And, the success that we've had in the last couple of years, it's been a lot of fun. There's always something to get better at, And so again, coming back to your 162 games, how we go through it, It really is. It's like it's a complete reset the next day. Mm. And the one thing that we're really good about is just resetting for the next day. So we all get upset about losses and everything else, and we'll have some bad ones mixed in there. But the one thing that we're really good about is the next day. We just really kind of forget
about. So you never just have a day where you're like, okay, I just need. A day where I just have to myself. I mean, I have those days. I'm just exhausted, mm-hmm. and I have to press the reset button, mm-hmm. and I just can't seem to.
Well, that's where, if that is as important to you as you say, then you have to find that 20, 30 minutes to have to yourself. And then yeah. you have to love that 20, 30 minutes. And so for me, like working out and that kind of thing, it just so happens I love to work out. You know, I like the way that it makes me feel. It makes me feel good on a daily basis and keeps me fit for working with these guys on each and every day. But it's also a time for me to think about things. It's also a time for me, whatever it is that I'm thinking about. And so I embrace that. And again, it was one of those things like, you know, why do I do this? Why do I love doing this? And so again, having the ability to kind of articulate why it is I'm doing it just reaffirms to me why it is I should keep on doing it. And so it is about growth on a daily basis, and it doesn't matter. I mean, coming here today and talking to you today has been an amazing experience.
Thanks, man.
It's been an amazing experience.
Yeah,
for
totally.
Us. I mean, honestly, I loved all our podcasts so far, but I will say so far, this is my personal favorite because of the things that you spoke about, because you made me look at me. And that's something that I think a lot of people every day just try to avoid. They don't want to look at themselves. They don't want to look at their faults. They don't want to look at, they have trouble getting out of their own way. And you've inspired me to, you know, and I've been on this path already, but you've inspired me even more. Mm. You know, what you said is about, you know, it's about the process.
Yeah.
And especially when you said, I forgot what question you asked, but you're like, you said, Stephen, I don't care if they notice. Because I'm doing this for me. Yeah. It's about doing things for yourself.
Yeah, totally.
You know, especially Dan, you said, you know, you've always been a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. I have too. I can never say no to somebody. Mm-hmm. And even when I don't want to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like
what I've been working on. It's like saying no, like because I'm so used to it. Like saying yes and being a people pleaser. Like when I say no, you can tell like in the body, it's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
No, this isn't you.
You're like uncomfortable.
Yeah. But I'm like, no. Just keep going through that. And eventually that will become kind of, you know, like normal, I guess. Like it's like, oh no, I can say no. I'm going to, you know, do things for me and do what makes me happy. Obviously without, you know, like putting somebody out or,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. And that's a huge part of the whole thing. Like we all kind of want to do, you know, things for ourselves or whatnot, but you're always going to have the person that says, well, that's selfish and everything else. And it's like, no. We, again, coming back down to it, everybody has goals, everybody has aspirations, but your aspirations should not be to the point where you drown out other people's aspirations. So it's about bringing everybody up and finding a way to do something that you love, but not doing it in a way that gets in the way of somebody else's aspirations. And so, and again, it's up to that other person to allow that, right? Mm. And so it's kind of a finicky game, you know, like I get, it's all cutthroat. It is. It's just the way it is. It's kind of a dog world out there. It really is. And I couldn't imagine what it's like to be as an actor or actress trying to go, you know, bouncing back from audition to audition in hopes to get that big break. Right. I couldn't imagine what that would be like. But it is, again, you know, for maybe people that are skeptical of that or whatnot, it is. It's about how can I aspire to be something without taking others' aspirations away.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And so just trying to navigate it that way. Yeah. It's extremely hard. It is, because you have those thoughts. It's like, and it doesn't stem from a selfish standpoint. It's more like, well, I have a family. Like I'm growing my family. I'm doing these types of things. And it's like, you know, I need to support them. I need to do this, you know? And it's like, no. Like you kind of have to get through those thoughts, because what it is just a distraction. And it's important to have family and friends that support you through that as well. Some of my closest friends are, you know, firemen and police officers, and, you know, my wife's a teacher. And so, you know, just having that ability to serve, right? And just, and love it. Mm. It's a It's a big deal.
We'll have to get your wife on sometime and chat about teaching and stuff like that.
Yeah. I actually love that.
Yeah, no, totally.
I'm sure she'd probably enjoy that. But yeah.
She's lovely. I remember meeting her. I think she was just your fiance at the time, though.
Maybe. You know, it's very possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a couple of years ago. Yeah. I mean,
are you instilling this in your, you've got kids, yeah?
We're actually expecting one.
Oh, okay. Well,
congratulations.
Like, congratulations.
Like, oh my gosh. Do you know if it's a boy or girl yet?
Girl.
Yeah, it's a
baby girl. We're gonna name her Emerson.
Aw, cute.
July 1st is the due date. But
so oh wow,
anytime. Yeah,
she's ready to burst. Yeah, okay, we'll give it a while before she can come on the podcast. All right.
I can't wait to meet Emerson. She'll be a cancer baby like I was.
Oh, that's fun.
Okay. July baby as well.
Okay,
she's very lucky to have a father like you.
Oh shoot, yeah, thank you.
Especially if you know you instill all of this kind of knowledge into her from an early age.
Well, it's like I'll use this example and I hope my wife doesn't mind. But
just tell her to stop listening at this particular point.
Just turn, just click. Okay. No, I mean, when we first met, we were different in a lot of ways. And just to kind of give you an idea, maybe a little bit more of how I kind of view things and how I try to approach things. She was completely different than me in a lot of ways, but it was those differences that she brought out in me that made me a better person. And so, again, if I didn't have the ability to take in that perspective and take in what, how she kind of viewed things and everything else, I wouldn't be the person that I am today. So I owe just as much to her, than anybody else.
Well, she should be listening to this.
as to why it is that I view things the way that I do. Because there is. It's almost like – it's like what is love, right? We were talking about like unconditional love, right? Well – you think about it, unconditional love, there's always a condition to it, right? So, I'm attracted to you. Hey, I like kind of your morals and beliefs and everything else. So there's always kind of a condition to it. But it is, you try to approach each other with an open mind and love that person regardless. Like, and if you truly understand where it is that they're coming from with certain things, you see through the tone, you see through the whatever it is, the emotion that's leading to whatever the argument is and everything else. And all of a sudden it's clarity. Mm. Clarity. So it's just, and love, right? So it's just because now you see the person for who they really are and everything else. There's nothing blocking there. So it's just kind of interesting.
There you go. Clarity and love. Clarity and love.
I think that you will truly understand, you will feel it. Once your daughter is born, I hear this from a lot of parents is that,
well, she's feeling it right now. Your wife is feeling unconditional love right now. Cause I've heard that the father isn't really a father until the baby is born. And then,
Yes. Yeah. Children are, that's unconditional love.
Yeah.
That's unconditional love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's absolutely quite amazing. It's only the conditions that are, that are kind of learned throughout the process of life, right? If the, daughter or son was born from unconditional love and was given unconditional love, well, they will then learn how to give unconditional love, right? They don't grow up in the conditions to which they live in and then set their standards by. And so I hope to instill some of those things, in my daughter and future son or whatever else. And coming back to your question with Lane and the way that we kind of interact and everything else, do I instill these things? I don't know. All I know is that what it is that I try to do, and I just try because then again, you're creating expectations, and I think that expectations for yourself, inner expectations intrinsically, are wonderful. But then once they start to leak extrinsically and you so have this external environment, which you start to kind of focus on, I think that's where, people get distracted, and that's what leads to either ultimate failure or upset with yourself or anything
or disappointment
else.
In somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
If you have, like, for instance, if you have an expectation on your wife for her to even react a certain way, if you tell her something and she doesn't meet that, it's not her fault. Yeah. And yet you'll blame her.
Yeah, well, exactly.
It's, so and you'll be disappointed.
And you take it away.
Yeah, there's this guy that I follow called Gary Vee, and he has this philosophy of like, I don't expect anything from anybody. He says, I think everybody's an asshole. And if you just go from that level, then, and you don't expect anything from anybody, like, then you know, everything's like, you know, hunky-dory, so to speak. It's like, oh, sweet, thank you, thank you. And he does things for other people and stuff like that. But if he just kind of has that kind of philosophy, that's how he approaches things. I mean, I'm probably not saying his quote, like, you know, verbatim, but, you know, I think it's that's kind of what he is and stuff like that. But we know you got to get out of here, dude. We've been talking for an hour and 10.
You have to go.
Sorry,
we kept you.
No, you're fine. No, you're perfectly fine.
I mean, we can keep talking if you want to keep talking, but if you need to go, like, we can knock it off. But
no, you know, I've thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you guys.
No, it's been a pleasure, man.
Yeah, I think it turned into kind of something kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
We popped your cherry.
Yeah.
Your podcast cherry.
Yeah,
no, totally. And, you know, congratulations and good luck with everything that you've been successful at, and also the baby. Yeah. And I look forward to, you know, doing another podcast with you maybe in a couple of months' time, and you're like, yeah, so I haven't had any sleep whatsoever for like, you know, 3 months.
We would love to have you on.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're up for it.
No, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'd love to come again. So please let me know. You know, and I hope, because you guys are launching the podcast soon.
Yeah, fact, yeah.
So
fairly soon. Yeah.
So
you know, I hope that again is, you know, successful.
Thank you very much.
As well,
we'll keep going, just doing our thing, and then.
I hope a lot of people tune into this one because your philosophy on life, and I just think a lot of people should hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been really good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you again for having me.
And, thanks for coming along,
man. Thank you.
Yeah, take again. Okay. Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
Take care, buddy.